BG.
All right, let's talk some NBA. Keith Smith joins us on a Progressive guest line from Sport Track Front Office Sports. Talk about the NBA as they're hitting into the last couple of months of the regular season on a Progressive guest line. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. How are you, Keith?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Good. We were talking about other sports, baseball, football, you know, other sports that talk about the numbers, right, and what numbers mean. Baseball numbers mean everything. But when it comes to the NBA and the scoring title that LeBron is chasing, for NBA guys, how big of a deal is this? How important is that mark in when you look at records and established records in the NBA?
Yeah, it's pretty huge. It's one of those ones. It's not one you can kind of rattle off. Like, you know, forever everybody knew it was, you know, 714 home runs for Babe Ruth. And then, you know, I believe it was 755 for Hank Aaron, I think was what the number was. And
yeah,
probably selling. I don't remember now. You know, and then you kind of knew your individual game numbers and those kind of things. And in basketball, everybody, you know, the numbers tend to be more game-driven. It's, you know, everybody knows 100 points, you know, right? Will Chamberlain, 100-point game. But that career mark was one of those things where I think everybody just kind of said, well, hey, if Michael Jordan didn't do it, nobody's probably ever going to do it. So what's the point of, you know, learning what this number is? And now we're here. We're probably 3-4 games at the most away from LeBron James breaking. And that's an absolutely massive accomplishment because it's not only talent, but it's talent combined with longevity, and longevity that is very good longevity of years and years and years of being a top player.
Well, let's stay in the conference that the Lakers are in, and let's go to the top with Denver. Nikola Jokic is a 2-time MVP. People, they are on top of the conference. But from a standpoint of the Nuggets, are they going to be active in adding players at the trade deadline to help this team get over the hump and get to a championship and get to a championship series and get to a title?
I don't know how active we're going to see them be. They're already far deeper into the luxury tax than they've ever been as a franchise. And beyond that, they don't have a lot of holes. They're a pretty well-formed roster. Their starting five is as good as any that there is in the league. Their bench is pretty solid. They've got some guys who, you know, come in, play their role, do exactly what's asked of them. I think if they can get an upgrade or two, maybe one more big, maybe one more ball handler, I think they would look to maybe do that, or a wing with a little bit more size. But I think for the most part, the Nuggets are looking at and saying, hey, we don't need a whole heck of a lot. We're pretty good with what we've got.
How deep is the Western Conference? You go down to 5, and there's Golden State, the defending champs. You go to 6, Luka Doncic and the Mavericks have been struggling a bit. How deep is this conference for legitimate conference winners?
Yeah, that's the key part. Is you can look at it and be like, oh, wow, you know, Golden State and Phoenix and Dallas, and if you still believe the Lakers are, you know, wow, those teams are, you know, that far down, this conference must be great. But then I always encourage people, now take a look at the records. They're all sitting right around 500. Right. And it's not because they're all beating up on each other so much night to night. It's they've been a bunch of, you know, just kind of okay teams this year. That said, I think the Warriors, the Suns, they're definitely legit contenders. Nobody wants to look across the floor and see Luka Doncic and know, all right, we got to deal with that for the next, you know, 7 games over 2 weeks. Same thing with the Lakers. You certainly don't want to be the 1 or 2 seed and you're feeling good and then, hey, first round, game one, let's go, and it's LeBron James and Anthony Davis on the other side. So it's deep, but I think teams you really truly believe in, you're probably looking at Denver, Memphis. For me, I would put the Warriors still in that bucket. They're starting to figure things out. And let's see what the Suns do. I think they've got a move in them here at the deadline, and they're starting to get healthy and starting to play like themselves again.
Zion Williamson being injured is kind of an old thing we talk about all the time. But if he's healthy, what does that make New Orleans, and where are they now without him?
Yeah, that's the tough part for the Pelicans between not having Brandon Ingram for most of the season and then Zion going down. We've seen them really kind of hit the skids here. It's been tough where it is just loss after loss after loss, and they're really struggling to get through this. And I think for the Pelicans, what now it is, it's you can't free fall so far that getting healthy can't help you get out of it. They've got to right this ship and start winning games here in the next couple of weeks. And then you can get back to the team where it's like, wow, they were frisky last year in the first round. They've got Zion now. This team looks like they could really make some noise, but you got to get those guys back on the floor. And then most importantly, you got to keep them on the floor too.
The Boston Celtics are the defending Eastern Conference champs. They are in first place. They have the best record in the NBA based on percentage. But in terms of the Celtics team, how much of a push are they getting from Milwaukee and Philadelphia right behind them?
Yeah, I think it's actually good for the Celtics that they haven't kind of run away and hid with this, because they're going to have to play it out. They're not going to be able to just kind of coast into the postseason. They're going to have to work all the way through. And I think for them, that's one of the places where that's a pretty good actual home court advantage, where a lot of the home court advantage stuff is kind of gone a little bit by the wayside in the NBA. There's a few places, Boston being one of them, where it's still a very real thing. And I think for them, the chance to be at home, have the easier path, not just at home, but play in an easier first-round series, probably get into a second-round series that's going to be kind of difficult. So having Milwaukee and Philadelphia and even Brooklyn kind of behind them, still just keeping pace, just staying close enough, that that's been good for the Celtics, because they're not going to be able to put this thing in cruise control, because sometimes we see teams do that and then they struggle all the way, you know, through that first round, maybe even sometimes the second round, and that can be a problem. So it's probably – a balance of, you know, you'd like to have enough of a lead that if, you know, a guy rolls an ankle, you can say, hey, take a week. But you also, you know, you don't mind being pushed either.
Brooklyn is without Kevin Durant. Kyrie Irving is playing well, though. I mean, it's back and forth with them without Durant. But how much is Kyrie needed to keep the ship at least floating a bit until Durant comes back?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You just got to kind of keep your head above water. Stay about where you were at. You know, if you can go 500 in the games he misses, you've kind of done your job. Now, that's tough. They've got a tough one tonight in Boston. They're also missing some other guys, too. So it's going to be difficult for them. But, you know, Kyrie he's turning in one of the better seasons he's had. And, you know, it gets lost, unfortunately, sometimes in all the other stuff with Kyrie and, you know, all the kind of circus that he is, you know, a big part of creating around him. But he is just an incredible basketball player. And he's the kind of guy who can really lift the team and take them to different heights. And you're seeing that now. He's doing everything he can to keep them going. So, like I said, stay right around 500 in the games Durant misses, and you're in pretty good shape when he gets to the playoffs.
How good is the Cleveland Cavaliers? If you're looking about teams in the middle of conferences, I feel like every time I see Cleveland, they're winning a couple in a row and they're winning games on the road. But then I go, all right, then I see the flip side of it. But how good are the Cavaliers that right now, I think, 5 or 6 in the conference standings?
Yeah, they're a young team that's finding their way. That's, you know, well, what I think we got a little too excited, some of us, when they won a whole bunch of games early. And yep. Then we, you know, you could kind of see, all right, they're probably going to slide a little. But now when you look at the Cavs, this is really the way it works in the NBA. They had their kind of step forward season last year where they almost made it into the playoffs and then lost in the play-in tournament. So then what happened after that, it became, all right, so, you know, where are we headed, you know, next with this group? And they went out, they made the big Donovan Mitchell trade. And now you're seeing them step forward into their playoff team. And they'll be probably, for them, you wanted to stay up in that top three because you wanted to get that easier first-round matchup. But they're probably going to be in the 4 or 5. We'll see. I wouldn't doubt that they could win a round. And then it's, all right, now what do we need? How do we fill our holes in around that? And that's kind of the general, you know, historic progression in the NBA. Is you have the step-forward season. You have the season where you make the playoffs, figure out what the playoffs are all about, and then you move forward from there.
There's a lot of people pointing out to this season saying, my goodness, there's a lot of 60-point games and 57-point games and 52-point games. Is there something there, or is it just, hey, you know what? You may have just noticing it more this year than in years past.
No, there are definitely more high-scoring games for certain, both on the individual and team level. And I think what caused the offense to be up, there's no one thing you can say, this is what it is. And, you know, it's funny because I know the old heads in the crowd like to say, well, they don't play any defense. And that's not true. They do play defense. I think what's happened is where now we've hit kind of the perfect storm of guys know, teams tell them, hey, don't shoot from the left wing, you know, from 18 to 22 feet. You never make it. So what guys don't do, they don't shoot from the left wing 18 to 22 feet. They'll move over to the right wing where, hey, those shots, they go in at 75% for you. Try to get to that spot on the floor. Players are, simply put, they're just better at shooting than they've ever been. We have now guys who, you know, since the time they were 7 or 8 years old, they've been training and in a way where it is really learning how to refine their games. So that talent combined with the analytics, combined with, you know, minor things like eliminating the take foul, has pace being played. The game is back to being played faster than has been played at points in years past. So I think you put all that together, and you're starting to see a team really start to get to a good place.
That's a great point. You know, analytics is affecting so much, but that is a fantastic point. Keith Smith, Front Office Sports and Sports Track on a Progressive Guest Line. Thanks for setting the table for the rest of the run of the NBA for the regular season into the playoffs, my friend.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Thank you. All right, we'll talk Brady's legacy, at least from the Boston perspective. Katie McInerney from the Boston Globe will join us, as we know we have gotten the announcement of Brady's retirement. Buzzing about it all show, and we will talk to her about that next as we continue with Wake Up Call.